You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Tego. Every other week, we'll delve into the world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show.
Today on the show, we welcome back, well, I guess for those who listened to the episode, I think some people ended up listening to that episode.
Really?
The sound wasn't right. Yeah, there were a few downloads of that. But for those who are listening to Yasmin's story for the first time, I guess welcome. So we tried to record this, was it last year or maybe earlier this year?
I believe it was in February.
Yeah, wow.
Or January. Yeah, it was definitely at the beginning of the year.
That's yeah. Time ago. Yeah. So
we forever.
We've been trying to, the first time didn't work out. And so we've been trying to reconnect to record, and we both seem to be very busy people. So I'm glad we're able to get this done now. We'll start by telling the audience about who you are. So share who you are, who's Yasmin, what's your background.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me again. I'm really glad to be able to do this again. As I said, I really love the show. So Yasmin loves to eat, point blank, period. and I always say that's a joke, even if you can see me. You can see it when you're looking at me because I'm skinny. But I love to eat. I really do. And basically, I was born and raised in Cote d'Ivoire from parents from Guinea, Senegal, and Mali. So I like to call myself as a West African. Yeah. And I like to believe that that played a lot into my love for West African food and my love, my passion for willingness to be to promote that, you know, African food. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, born and raised in Cote d'Ivoire.
And you grew up, you went to school there, did live there all your life pretty much?
Yeah, I grew up here. I stayed here until I was 17.
Okay.
And then I'd spent a couple months in Senegal because we did have political tension in the country in my last year of high school. So I went to finish high school in Senegal. And I went to the U.S. at 17 up until I was 24, 25.
Oh,
so yeah, I went there for college mainly. Worked a little bit, but mainly for college. Came back to Cote d'Ivoire, worked for about 10 years. Left again to go for a master degree in the UK.
Okay.
And I came back end of last year. And in between, of course, traveling and eating my way around the world.
So I'm curious, like, when you first moved, I don't know if you remember when you first moved to Senegal. Mm-hmm. What your experience with food was like, and how, you know, how much did you think it was different or the same? Were you surprised by the food, especially that you tried, or even the culture, I would say?
Not really, because, like I said, you know, I've had this mix of cultures growing up.
Yeah.
So even though, you know, I grew up here, but, you know, from my families, from my environment, and even extended family, I mean, you know, Africans, we always have uncles and aunties from all over. So I did experience some of the Senegalese culture here. Of course, it's not the same thing when you go over there, but
being in the country,
exactly. But the I was already acquainted with the food, the way you know, sometimes on Sundays we'll eat all together, sitting on the mat, you know, eating the different. So it wasn't such a difference for me, but definitely being in the country just added to my experience overall. I mean, generally speaking. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm actually looking forward to go back.
Yeah,
it was great.
It's on my list. I've never been to Senegal.
Okay.
Although I lived, you would not believe this, I lived in the Gambia for a year, and I never.
Okay, you have no excuse.
I know. And I never.
You have no excuse.
I just for those that don't know, Gambia is literally in the middle of Senegal. Like it's wrapped around by Senegal.
Mm-hmm. And I heard it's a beautiful country. Yeah, I mean, they're doing good things tourism wise and stuff.
Yeah, it was a good year. It was my year after high school. Like the, I had a year of going to college and spent it there with my family.
That's pretty cool.
So it's still on my bucket list.
West African countries. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
And so, like, when we're going to talk about your experiences as a West African food blogger, and I want to start with talking about like your food influences, right? So you have this mix mash of, you know, Senegal and Mali and Cote d'Ivoire. What were sort of your earliest memories of food, and what made you start in terms of that and translating it to the food blog? How did you go from, you know, enjoying your own food and culture to deciding you wanted to write about or showcase West African food through a blog?
Well, funny enough, your question is as many areas to it, so let me start. Funny enough, my growing up and my experience with the culture, the different food and the heritage that, you know, I've shared from my, you know, my parents and stuff, mm-hmm. didn't really influence my, you know, me venturing into blogging.
Interesting.
It was only when I went to the US, like I said, at 17, and I was living in Harrisburg, capital of PA. And in this residence called International House.
Okay.
So it was basically a lot of international students just living together, you know, under one roof. And my roommate was Japanese. And he was like, oh, my God. That was, if you want, the start of it all. Because being, like, just meeting other people. I mean, the U.S. is the greatest place ever to meet so many cultures at the same time. You know, I had like a friend from Uzbekistan. I didn't even know where the country was at that time. best friend was Vietnamese. And all of those people, they love to cook.
Right.
I love to eat, but I'm not so much of a cook person. So I will always be doing dishes and they will cook. So my roommate loved cooking and she was making all those Japanese dishes. Right. Of course, she introduced me to the world of, you know, seafood and, I mean, not seafood, sorry, sushi. Yeah. So that was the beginning of it all because I was like, wow, you know. I mean, I've always been curious about, you know, I like to call, I mean, back in the days, my description was, I'm a West African foodie with international taste buds because everything that I eat, I love. And then I started being curious, you know, I started eating Korean food and, you know, kimchi and Vietnamese food and just being exposed to that. So it's funny because it wasn't, even though my childhood was, the food that I experienced in my childhood was, it was amazing, but it wasn't that, you know, that did it for me. It was traveling, being exposed to different cultures, if you want, all at once, that really, sparked my curiosity about what's out there, what is there to, you know, basically what I didn't experience yet and how can I, you know, test it all.
Right. Yeah, no, and it's actually when you say that, it reminds me also, actually, that's a good point of like my first college. So I also went to the US for college too, and was my first true international exposure, right? So my roommate was Korean and my best friends were from Turkey, Japan, Kuwait, and India.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's good.
We had that core group of like international student friends. And you're right. Like it's food. It's through food in a lot of ways that we connected, right?
Exactly.
I didn't know. I wasn't as aware of, I don't know what the right way, but it was definitely, I wouldn't say my sort of interest in the African food space started there, but that was my sort of first exposure to national foods. And then also my first experience trying to explain. I'd never in my life had to explain what like my food was, you know, and it was the first time that I had to think about what is my food and what are the different components, like, you know, I just never thought about it. And so it was an interesting intellectual exercise in some ways.
Definitely. And just to add to that is that, you know, sometimes we'll have all those cooking, those cookout where everybody yeah. has to bring something.
The potluck. And I was always, stuff, yeah.
exactly. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And I was like, Mom, what am I going to cook? What am I going to bring? Because then you realize that those people that never knew where Cote d'Ivoire was, never maybe met a person from your country, mm-hmm. they're going to taste that one dish and automatically believe that, you know, if it's good or bad, right. that's what you eat in your country. So I was like, okay, I have to do this right. Mommy, what am I going to cook? So it was always interesting because then you will go back to what you right. used to like and try to make it as, you know, as close as possible that's to them, you know, faithful as possible to the that. Recipe.
Yeah, representing yeah, so. The whole country with that one.
Exactly, the whole country just on your small shoulders, just because you have to bring something to the potluck. So yeah, that was also funny yeah, and interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. And then what was the impetus then for starting the food blog? So, you know, you've had this international experience, I guess you're mm-hmm. back in Cote d'Ivoire, I suppose, when you start the blog. Like, what made you think, okay, I'm gonna blog and then also specifically blog about food, African food?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. So I come back in Cote d'Ivoire in 2009, if my memory serves me right. And then, you know, anytime I was going out with my boyfriend, was like, okay, where were we going to eat? So it was really a word of mouth type of thing. If I was in an area, I'll call a friend and say, hey, I'm in this area of Abidjan. Where should I go? Okay. And then she said, oh, I heard of this restaurant, so and so, and you know, and whatnot. And then one day I had, so the idea, I want to say the idea was already in my mind, because I believed, I mean, at that time, there was no platform where you can just go online, Google, and just search for, you know, restaurants, lounges, anything that had, you know, to do with food.
Right.
So, I mean, locally speaking. And so, you know, the idea was in the back of my mind, but I was like, you know, those type of things, you think about it and then you move on with your life. And then I had won on a contest on Facebook, a dinner for two at a seafood place. And so, you know, you do the usual research, you know, you're going to eat seafood because, you know, it's a seafood place. But I was curious. I didn't know how the restaurant looked like. I didn't know where the restaurant was. Back then, Facebook pages were just about, I think they had started, but a few years ago or not even, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But Facebook pages were not.
Pages are now more, maybe there were more groups than pages to begin with. I don't remember.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, they were not really that much in use. Instagram was still, you know,
right,
still
yeah.
Like something like unknown to a lot of people. Mm. So it was really hard to find information. So as soon as we get there, I was with my boyfriend and I'm like, hey, what if I start a blog? And he was like, yeah, do it. I was like, okay. It's easier to say it, but, you know, I knew what a blog was, but, you know, I didn't know where to start, how to start, what to talk about. And basically the idea was, I want to create a platform, because from that problem came a solution.
Right.
I want to create a platform made by an Ivorian for Ivorians looking for places to eat, information, or just even, you know, how to find a restaurant. Was the staff friendly? Was, you know, the ambience or the atmosphere nice? Was the food good? So it really started just in the parking lot of that restaurant. I will never forget it. It was like, hey, I will start a blog. So it was really just like then, of course, he helped and pushed me to do it, because of course I was never going to do it on my own. And yeah, it just started back then, 2012. I had the idea, I believe, in February. The dinner happened in February. I launched the blog in April.
Okay.
And yeah, that was it. And when I looked online, I didn't even, like I said, I didn't even know a lot of blogs back then, but I realized that it was the first blog, the first food blog of
having Ivorian Cote d'Ivoire. Yeah,
exactly. So I was like, wow. So I don't think I even realized what I had created until people started writing and saying, if you stop doing this, we're gonna get mad at you. And I was like, okay, this is serious. So that was really interesting. And yeah, it's been 7 years
Wow.
Yeah, 7 years ever
that's
since.
That's a long interest, that's some dedication and commitment.
I know. And I mean, to be honest, I haven't been that consistent. I guess we'll talk about it later, but I haven't been that consistent with it. But it's been an amazing, amazing, amazing journey. I mean, okay. I really can't stress that enough.
All right. I think we will take a quick break here. And then when we come back, for those listening that don't know about Ivorian food, I want us to sort of dial back, take a step back and talk about what Ivorian food is. So the different kinds of food you have in the different regions, just educate people a little bit about that. Then we'll talk about food tourism. We'll talk a little bit about the different components of the blog and how you use it. I know you also host an Abidjan restaurant week. We'll talk about that and then wrap up with our rapid fire questions. So,
okay, cool.
A short break here.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. We'll be right back.
All right. So we're now going to talk about Ivorian food. My experience with Ivorian food is limited to achike and aloko and pule. And it's like there's so many in Accra. I don't know, there's been just an explosion of achike spots. Like that's now, like we have our local chop bars, but now I feel like there's a lot of people. I don't know if it's an indication of people's interest, growing interest in food from other parts of West Africa. But achike spots are just like popping up all over the place. And I don't know if it's also because the ingredients are pretty similar to other stuff we do. So it's easy to take it and but for those that are listening that don't know, have no clue what I'm saying when I say achike, can we explain to them what that is? And then also share a little bit about other Ivorian foods that I may not know about.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I'm really not surprised that your experience with Ivorian food is limited to achike and aloko. And that's one thing I'm trying to fight with this new product coming up next year. But you know, I'll tell you about it next year. So basically, I mean, achike was, we eat a lot of it here. And basically what it is, it's, you know, it's made out of cassava. Mm-hmm. So, which is grounded, it's grated, it's grounded and into what we can say couscous-like grains.
Yeah.
A lot of people that I've met sometimes compare it to gari, but it's similar,
but not...
But I don't think so. But oh well.
It's like a wet gari. So gari, for those that don't know, is also grated cassava. But it's a dry, so it's I feel like it's fried, I guess, and it's drier and so you use it in different forms. But achike is achike in its own.
achike is special on its own.
Yeah, it's special on its own. Although I will say I went to I don't mean to interrupt to say, but I went to a pop up dinner like a couple of weeks ago that was hosted by someone with Liberian roots, and she made on the menu was they had achike and tilapia, and I was so excited because I thought it was going to be similar to Ivorian achike, but it was different. It was
really
more, they prepared the achike like it was more of a dumpling, like a fufu. It's interesting. Yeah, I'll see if I have a picture, and
I'll be curious to see that, my friend.
It was called a check, and I was like, oh, this is different. But I don't know if Liberians have a different achike situation. But anyway, so there's a check which we is different. It's just cassava is the long story short.
Exactly, it's made out of cassava, and we basically eat that. It's one of the most classic thing. If anybody was to come, it's, you know, it's available, you know, on the streets. It's available in restaurants, and you can basically eat it with how do you call it? Barbecued or fried fish or chicken, and that's really like a classic thing that you eat because we have a lot of makis here. You still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. So we have a lot of makis, which are like outdoors, informal restaurants all over the town. all over the country.
So, like street, so you know, food essentially.
Exactly. So yeah, that's one of the quickest things to make. However, we do have a lot of stew as well. Well, aloko, before jumping to stews and stuff. Aloko is fried plantains, banana. So, of course, plantain is eaten all over from Jamaica to Ghana, right next door. And I think it's, for me, the difference lies in how you cut it and how, you know, frying is universal, but how, you know, it can be cut in different regions of the world. But plantain is bae. That's all I can say.
For you guys, it's a local specific recipe, because in Ghana, one of the things that, like a true foodie, Ghanaian foodie will like cringe at is when people see fried plantain and it's called kiliwili. Because kiliwili, I don't know if you've heard of kiliwili, it's different fried plantain, right? And so it's aloko. So kiliwili is essentially fried plantain. It's a softer plantain. It's fried with a lot of spices, ginger, peppers, and so on and so forth. And that is the specific recipe for it, and it's called kiliwili. And then there's just your regular fried plantain that you can fry and eat with beans or whatever. Is it just fried plantain, or is it
treated
a certain way or treated a certain way for it to be called aloko?
No, aloko, like from what you just said, aloko is just fried plantain, you know, plain and basic, just seasoned with a little bit of salt. That's it. Then I think something similar to kiliwili,
you said.
Yeah. Yep. It's we call here klaklo. So basic.
We have klaklo also.
Okay, so I don't know if it, but you know, from the description you just mentioned, the way that the fact that it's seasoned, it's mashed up, and you can put all type of seasoning in there, and that's also so good.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's a translation of, because kaklo, you at least I mostly identify it with the Ewe tribe, which is where I'm from, and we're mostly like, my family is also partly Togolese, so I think we get that influence from that, and part some of my family also lives in Abidjan, so I don't know if it's the same sort of thread that goes out. You know, across the French-speaking, West African.
And interestingly enough, you see what, I mean, we're just talking about it, we just realized that we have similarities in our food. And that's the beauty of African food. I mean, African food or West African food.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the same, because our people grew up together.
Yeah,
you know, it's
basically divided up into different.
Thank you. So we're not going to go into politics and colonialism, but you know where I'm headed. So they're all grew. I mean, we have, you know, the Akan people in Ghana are the same Akan people here in Cote d'Ivoire. It's just that, you know, we have borders, but the food is the same. And of course, let's say our French influence may have played a little part into it, whereas, you know, the British in Ghana and, you know, and stuff like that. So it's basically the same food. It's just called differently. It may look differently or taste differently, but the foundation or the product used are, you know, basically the same.
Pretty much the same, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So just to mention a few other things, we do have palm oil nut sauce, which is a very, very rich, and I'm sure you have that in other countries as well. We usually eat that with plantain, what we call sutu. So we have sutu and we have fufu. So
I don't think I know what that is.
Fufu is thick, and it's basically boiled plantain, which is pounded.
Interesting.
So, yeah. It's pounded either by itself, the plantains, or with yam, and you have different varieties of it. Whereas fufu is still boiled plantains, but it's mashed. So it's different. And
I don't think I've tried that before.
Yeah, I know in Ghana it's kind of the other way around or something. Yeah. I don't. Yeah, like I said, the foundation is the same. So we eat the fufu with the palm oil nut sauce, which is also good. We also have a dish called kejenu, which is basically like it's a spice meal. It could be, it's basically tomato based, but with a lot of vegetables. And basically you put all the vegetables in together, you know, water, tomato, everything that you put want to put in as vegetable. You can cook it with, you know, either chicken or, you know, it's basically chicken. Some people can cook it with rabbit. Sorry if there are people that are animals. Animal friendly. It's not me cooking it. Don't hate me. But you know, the meat can vary from one culture to the other. But it's really, it's slow cooked. And, it's from the tradition. It's called cooked in one of those African rounded dish. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, but you know, I can picture it. I can picture it, but I don't know.
Yeah, sorry guys if you can't. and it's basically covered with a banana leaves.
So it's really just the
fact that it's steaming and it's slow cooked.
We need
and
to find a picture or video of that.
I know, right? But yeah, so I mean, I can talk about Ivorian food for days, but yeah. I know we have to cut it short. But I do talk about it on my blog, actually, even though it's not complete yet. So I have a part of it. It's called Taste of Cote d'Ivoire. So if people are interested,
specifically.
Yeah, because I get asked that question all the time, especially living in all this country.
Right.
Why do you eat in Cote d'Ivoire? Like, for example, you will know that in Ghana, you know, there's a jollof war with Nigeria, or you know, you know, in different countries, you can hear, like, you know from the international exposure that in Ethiopia, you know, there's injera and there's all this, you know, the food. But okay, when it comes to West Africa, Senegal, you can say, yeah, okay, there's chapujin, or you know, there's yassa. But when it comes to Cote d'Ivoire, it's kind of difficult. So I get asked that question all the time.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. We'll be right back.
I'm hoping, like, I shouldn't put that out there as a goal. Like, we're talking offline about how we all have these grand goals and fall short of them. Like, I really hope that by the time I'm done with this podcast, that I've interviewed someone from at least one of each country, so they get a sense of food from all over.
I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even in my country alone, I haven't tasted everything.
Right.
So can you imagine on the continent? Right, it's just, there's it's
people
insane.
That are doing, like, even just in Ghana, there's food bloggers and food entrepreneurs who are, you know, introducing me to food from other parts of the country that I didn't even know existed. So
exactly.
Yeah, so that's all good. So I want to tie that to the work that you do with Abidjan Restaurant Week. So again, sort of what you'd been doing the blog for some time, and then you sort of decided that you wanted to put on this restaurant week.
Mm-hmm.
What was sort of the push to do that, and what's the experience? How is it set up, and what has been the experience of putting that together?
I like to say I'm a very faithful person, and I like to say that Abidjan Restaurant Week was a God-sent idea. I really won't know how to explain it better, because I literally just woke up one day with the idea in mind, and I was
okay.
It's crazy. So I know since 2012, I've been doing the blog. And in 2014, I really started to ask the question that I knew there was something bigger than the blog, but I just didn't know how or, you know, what ways that could lead me to something bigger. So I kept asking myself that, what can I do that's bigger than just me eating, taking pictures? Even though the way I say it, it sounds simple.
But it's a work of educating and showcasing what's in the Ivorian scene, which, like you just said, is not that well known. So
it's not that well known. But for me, because I'm kind of hard on myself, and I always wanted to do something. I think I really wanted to do something bigger than just myself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because for me, the blog is personal. You know, I can choose the restaurants where I go to. I can choose whether to talk about it or not. And basically, the food that you choose is the food that you're going to picture and stuff. So it still reflects your own experience and your personality. Whereas I wanted to do something bigger for my community, for my country, and to showcase what we had, you know, out there. So that idea came about September 2014, like I said, in the middle of the night. I'm not going to go deeper into that. That's another story for another day. Okay. And I started doing research right away because I was like, okay, Abidjan restaurant. Like, I had heard of a restaurant thing before because, of course, it's an American concept. But, you know, it was still kind of unknown to me. So the following day at work, I ain't going to lie, I didn't work that day. I was Googling like a mad woman. Just restaurant. And as soon as you type in restaurant week, you know, it just popped up everything from, you know, Singapore restaurant week right. to New York restaurant. It was just insane. I was overwhelmed with information. Of course, very excited. Then again, nothing happened apart from the research in 2014. 2015, nothing happened. And 2016, and when I say nothing happened, it has unfortunately a lot to do with the fact that I want to say I suffered with imposter syndrome for a while. I'm still suffering from it.
I get that.
You see what I mean? Yeah, you think you're not good enough. You think, who am I to want to do something like that? You think, I don't have the resources. I don't have the money. I mean, you give yourself all kind of excuses not to jump and, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
So 2016, then that's when I realized, I guess, it's been 2 years. You got to do something with yourself. Right. And if you don't, I just a quick pair, quick thing. I've been talking with a friend about it and he was like, you know what? When God gives you an idea, if you don't execute it, it's going to give it to someone else. And I was like, no, I don't want that to happen. You know, I want to make him proud. I want to do it. And so, you know, I started to think about it, talk to it with some friends and, you know, guys, please help me. You know, you in the marketing, you can help me. You into graphic design, you can help me. You into website building, you can help me. And it really just started like that. At the time, I had applied to the Mandela Washington Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And thank God, I got through it. So I want to say it kind of boost my confidence a little bit.
That's right. So you got onto, so can you tell people very quickly what that is for those that don't know?
Yeah.
I think I've interviewed a couple of people on the podcast who... Ben Mandela Washington.
Yeah, Jay from Ghana.
Yeah, I think Jay was also
2017. So yeah, it's basically quickly. It's a program that was led and designed by the previous American president Barack Obama, and it gives young African leaders the chance to do a 6 weeks intensive. Program in the US. There are 3 tracks into it. So they basically can go into business and entrepreneurship, public management, or civic leadership. And, you know, you are exposed to different, you know, in my case, it was entrepreneurship. So different entrepreneurs talking about the successes and failures. You go to school. It's basically a back in the school program. Some can refer it as a mini MBA.
Okay.
So it's really trained for you to either launch a business if you haven't done already, or, you know, grow a project, or just basically have an impact in your community.
Right.
And you just have to, that's how you select it. You just show that if they do invest in yourself, it's not just for yourself. It's basically for the greater good, and it's for your country, it's for the continent, it's to tie in, you know, African countries with the US and make, you know, greater connections and stuff
right.
like that.
And I remember from not just Jay's experience, but other people that I know that have participated, it's also a great way to connect with other Africans from around the continent, right?
Oh, yes. So unbelievable.
Kenya, from other parts of the continent that you otherwise wouldn't have, that may also be doing something in your space, right?
And it's funny, we used to say that we went to America to meet Africa. No, because literally one of my roommates was from Djibouti, quickly. Another one was from Central African Republic.
Wow.
And another one from Nigeria. Of course, I've met Nigerians before, but just Nigerians are everywhere.
Yeah.
But just, you know, having that melting pot in the apartment alone, it was just great, you know, from the food, from the culture, from the night talks. from everything. It was an amazing program.
And I hope, I think it's still on.
It's still on. And actually, it's the application for next year is ongoing now. So if everybody's interested, you can either Google it and ask me questions. I'd be more than glad to help you. Coming back from it, just gave me that boost I needed, that confidence boost, And I just went for it. I just started, approaching one restaurant at a time, and then I will just pitch the idea to them. And just quickly, for those of you who don't know Restaurant Week, it's the goal of the event, which was born in New York in 1992 by the founder of Zagat, the guide, was to promote the restaurants during a slow period for them. So I believe in New York, for example, it's January when it's freaking cold outside and nobody wants to go out. And, the business is slow. So they will have these special menu at discounted price.
Oh,
so that would drive... it will drive volume, and basically when you partner with restaurants, you really want them to showcase their either signature dishes or creativity and have more people coming in. So for me here, of course, you can't just copy and paste the concept. You have to adapt it to the market. And for me, it was really, how a lot of people will say that, restaurants that do propose serve gastronomic food are posh or for certain clientele. And, the everyday Ivorian cannot go to those restaurants. Well, it may be true in some cases, but sometimes it's just a matter of misconception. And so it was really, for me, the idea that everybody can go to the restaurant. If you do, if there's a good deal on the menu, you can go and experience just on top of my head, fine Italian dish or fine Korean dish or fine Japanese dish. I mean, the food scene in Côte d'Ivoire is so diverse. That's also one of the things that pushed me to do it, because I was like, I mean, we have everything from Brazilian to Japanese to French, Italian, Vietnamese, Ethiopian. We have all those restaurants here. And I knew I had to do something to showcase that, to not only us living here, but of course people out there, so that's basically how this came about. First edition was in 2017. Great turnout, more than 600 people participated.
Wow.
And I had 9 restaurant partners. Then 2018 I was in the UK, and then when I came back this year, I really wanted to do it. So I did the second edition in July, and it was a good turnout. It wasn't as great as the first one. Lots and lots of lessons learned. from
what
this experience.
What do you think was the difference between the first time and this time around?
From personally, I think the biggest for me was the choice of restaurants.
Okay.
Because there's one thing, you do lead, basically you choose a restaurant who decided to partner with you on the event, and they propose, you give them a guideline, but they propose the menu. They propose a menu and they propose a price. In all over the world, pretty much, it's a set price. So let's say if all the restaurants are doing lunch at $20, all the restaurants would do also dinner at 35 or 40.
Yeah.
I couldn't apply that here. So that's the trick, because, you have a restaurant that it's not really high-end or, posh or whatever, but the diversity that they will propose in their food will be great. Whereas you have a really fine establishment. So you can't really ask them to be put on the same price. So that's something I'm trying to go about, because that's a disadvantage in the concept itself. And also the choice of restaurants. I believe I could have made better choices. Those are lessons learned for next year.
That's interesting. And I wonder if I don't think that's as much of a barrier, at least I could say, in Accra, I can say specifically for Accra, or I want to say on the continent in general, but Accra in terms of real estate prices, which is what, like, if you're in the UK, excuse me, or in the US, in cities like New York, where real estate gets expensive, you'll find that specifically for African food, you'll not find a lot of them in, what's the right way to put it? Like, you find a lot of them in smaller, like, almost just takeaway situations where you're not likely to have the opportunity to actually sit and enjoy a full meal, because we are constrained by resources in terms of finding bigger spaces, paying for, you know, staff to actually have a full dining experience.
Exactly.
And I wonder if I don't know that that's a similar situation in terms of, like, local food, when you're thinking about the spectrum of restaurants doing food in the Western week. But it sounds like that was one of the concerns in terms of different price levels and different.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. So yeah, like I said, lesson learned.
Yeah. Situation. Yeah. So we'll be wrapping up here. So what's the next phase? You've done 2 Africa Western Weeks. You've done Yali, which sort of given you sort of a broader business perspective, connected with other Africans. What do you see that's next for Afrofoodie?
Well, at the beginning of the year, I had rebranded my website.
Well, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. From before, it was called Journal d'une Foodie, which is French, of course, and it can be translated to a foodie's diary, because it was basically, you know, my diary of food experiences.
Yeah.
And from traveling in, you know, the countries I mentioned before, it was interesting for me to see that people from the diaspora, but also people from English-speaking countries, were interested in reading about it. You know, with the boost of tourism, especially in African countries, you find a lot of people are more and more interested in visiting your country. But if they only find information in French, it's not going to do it. So I tried to build a bilingual platform. I say tried because it's really hard. And even though
are you translating, like, yourself? Are you going using?
Yes. Okay. I am. But like I said, I've been putting a lot of things in standby because other projects are happening. So I did rebrand the website to a bilingual platform, but I haven't been consistent with it. But definitely that's something that I have to work on in the near future. When I was in the UK, it was also thanks to my blog, but it was to do a master in international tourism, because my big passion as of now is focusing on food tourism.
Oh,
and like I said,
right.
Promoting my food from a culinary standpoint to the rest of the world. So I do have a big project coming up. It's actually a business. So I'm going to dip my toes in. Hey, you learned an OMO. Shout out to my people.
Yeah.
I'm going to dip my toes in entrepreneurship. It's been a long time coming. I've been afraid again to do it, but I believe next year is the year, by God's grace.
Awesome.
Business coming up, promoting Ivorian food. I'm not going to say much more.
Okay.
Crossing fingers.
We'll be watching the space, I guess.
Yeah, and just keeping on promoting. So I've been doing, you know, some here and there partnership with brands and restaurants, you know, to promote their communication, and just working into that, you know, content creation space. Again, not on a consistent basis, because, you know, I found myself wanting to do all of it at the same time.
Right.
And I just realized that it's just not happening. So as of now, I'm really taking it slow, doing one thing at a time. And especially when you are alone, I used to say, coming back to my favorite couple in the UK, you and Yolanda, that they're so lucky to have each other, because you know, you can talk among yourself and brainstorm. I mean, of course, I have a support system, but at the end of the day, you're still alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know
so,
what you mean. I've actually struggled with, like, I've gone back and forth about it, in that there've been I think it's a double
challenging time,
right? Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. One in that, like, if you have a clear vision and direction for where you want to go, mm-hmm. you don't need to necessarily check in with anyone and sort of have them because sometimes you have a very strong conviction, right? And so if you
exactly.
had a team or something, that could sort of move that around. But on the other mm-hmm. hand, it's nice to be able to not have to be the only person that's thinking about this, like,
exactly
all the time.
Yeah,
like you wake up at night and just think, oh my god, like, did I do
even just the brainstorming process,
yeah,
you know, sharing
right.
ideas, you know, talking about it. Yeah. So basically, yeah, lots of product coming out, but definitely building a business around my passion. That was the goal of doing a master's degree in tourism. And I believe it will all fit into.
Yeah,
all the pieces were coming together.
I think because there's a lot more focus on the continent as a tourist destination. Obviously,
yeah,
this holiday season, most of it is focused on Ghana. But I think that there will be.
I know.
I
I'm
think
jealous.
Be,
they should come. It's next
know,
door.
Yeah.
You know, we can do something.
I mean,
here.
It's great, but I feel like. I don't know if Accra can take all that, but we'll see. And maybe
yeah.
the sort of spillover effect might be that, yes, people then decide, okay, I've done Accra for a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else is there to offer in the region?
And yeah,
like,
I mean,
it's a great opportunity, and there's bound to be spillover, you know, effects.
Oh, yeah. And especially when it comes to the food, because,
right.
of course, that's for me one of the best things to experience a culture,
right.
you know, trying the local food, you know, connecting with the local people. But yeah, food definitely is huge. So yeah, crossing fingers.
Exciting stuff. Good. Okay, so before we do the rapid fire questions, you should let people know where they can find you online, social media, your website.
Mm-hmm. So basically blog website, it's called Afrofoodie. So afrofoodie.net.
Okay.
And then once you click on that, you have the English version. It's, you know, the little flag is right there, so you can translate.
I
and
look, I should look into it. I don't know how I translate my podcast into French, so that.
Oh yeah, I can help you one day. I'm not saying tomorrow,
yeah.
but you know, we can discuss that definitely. And then Twitter, Instagram, Facebook is Afrofoodie.
Okay.
The only difference is Twitter is Afro_foodie.
Okay.
But yeah, if you just Google Afrofoodie, something should come up, and
yeah,
then that
sure.
can lead
I'll
you
put it
to
in
me.
The show notes. So if you're listening, if
uh-huh.
you just tap the cover art, it will show the show notes, and then you can see the links to click to
yes.
the website and social media and all that good stuff. So
yeah, and if anybody's interested, like I said, about the different programs I've been on, whether it's Yali, Chevening. I'm also now in another program called it's called AWEC. It's African Women Entrepreneurship Cooperative.
Oh, look at you.
It's also promoting, and it's also thanks to the blog. So, hey, it's also promoting women businesses in Africa.
Oh, that's really
I'm
neat.
More than happy to discuss those opportunities with anyone because, I mean, they're a blessing in a way, but not just for me. They're a blessing for me to help other people as well.
Yeah.
So, I'm definitely interested in that. Just holler
well,
somewhere on social media.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. So let's do our rapid fire questions.
Okay. All right. Ready?
I tried to switch that.
I know there's a trick one. I'm gonna take a joker on it. I hope you didn't put that again.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't know what I don't remember what I asked you the last time. So
okay, go ahead. Shoot. Fire
thing.
Away. I'm ready.
We talk. Okay. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Morning person or night person?
Morning person.
This is good. What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Food. Like, I'm literally, when I'm hungry, I'm just like, okay, it's time to get up. I'm not lying.
It's
the plain truth.
It's just like, it's just food. Okay. And then the last question. If you could live on one dish for the rest of your life, what would that be?
That would be fonio. I know I had to describe it last time, but it's basically a dish I grew up with from Guinea because
mm-hmm.
my mom's side, you know, the family is from Guinea, and we also find it in the north of Cote d'Ivoire. and you can eat it with a tomato based stew or peanut butter stew. It's small grains.
Oh, that's macronio, yeah. So
it's all the rave these days.
It's supposed to be it's a superfood.
Thank you. Yeah,
chef and all that good stuff.
Yeah, if you know Chef Pierre Thiam, who is Senegalese, he's been promoting fonio a lot, and
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just love it. I don't know. I keep asking my mom if, you know, they cut my umbilical cord with it when I was born. I don't know, but I can just live off of that. It's really light, really good. Fonio, anytime, any day.
And it's Chef Pierre's brand is called Yolele.
Exactly, yes.
And we've used that in events in the past. We actually, I'm going to New York this weekend to co-host an event on Monday.
Is it related to food?
It's actually related to, we're trying to, working with Impact Hub New York Metro Area, who is trying to build an Africa innovation ecosystem. And one of the aspects of that is food. And so we've invited Yolele as part of the discussion on the food
component.
And they'll be bringing samples of Sonia. So,
okay, please share it and share with me afterwards. I'd love to hear about it.
I'll definitely let you guys know all about how that goes.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. That was it.
So I passed the rapid fire question.
Yes,
you didn't ask me about Nigerian jollof or Ghanaian jollof.
I'm trying to stay away from that controversy now.
Yeah, I don't want to lose any friends. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for making the time.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @Item13Podcast. Thank you.